At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy.
And today we are going on an international journey.
Really?
Yes.
Have you ever done international, well, outside of Canada?
I just did Andrew Godson and that was England.
You're right.
Exploring the world, Amy.
I guess you are.
This was actually on our request list.
I'm just glad to see you broaden your horizons.
Yeah. We'll get you to do a case from like 2021 and then it'll all be all over.
You're right. Yep.
But you're right. The thing with this is it's hard because you don't know what are valid sources. You don't know what are good newspapers versus pet tabloids. So I had to like cull a bunch of different data. But today, this is actually on our request list. And I am shocked neither of us have dove into this before, because you know how we say people don't just vanish? They do, apparently.
I mean, we say that and then we hear of cases like Maura Murray.
Yes. I would tell you this is very much almost like a Brian Schaefer.
You know I can't handle these cases.
So, are you ready to talk about Trevor Dealey?
Barely after that lead up, but yeah, I want these cases solved, so I want to hear about it.
Okay. So Trevor was born in August of 78. His parents, Michael and Anne, he was the youngest of four. He had an older brother and two older sisters. Mm-hmm. They were all pretty close. I actually listened to an interview with his brother, and he said that he had seen Trevor recently before he went missing. And yeah. When Trevor went missing, he was 22. And his brother talked about hanging out with him more recently. And he was like, I was just starting to really get to know him as an adult.
Yes, he's the youngest. So for that sibling, it was like this kid who's doing their kid thing, grumpy teen, or, you know, they kind of like hang out with their friend group. And that's the only thing that matters.
Right. All right, so anyway, he was close to his siblings. He didn't love school. He didn't play sports. He just kind of, like, coasted through school, is what I gather, okay? And then he went to study business, and he hated it and dropped out. But then he got into a program for computer science. Now, this is 1998, 1999. And this seemed to be what Trevor needed. Everything just kind of clicked for him. He loved it.
And I imagine as much as it was like news to him and to others maybe, like you have to remember, I mean, I'm thinking 1995, 96, I knew one, maybe two people with a computer.
Right.
And they had like AOL and that's all we knew. You could type papers maybe and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, I was in high school in these years and agreed. So, in May of 99, he graduates and he gets multiple job offers.
Yep.
And in one of the interviews I read with his dad was basically like, take them with the bank. It's good hours. It's at a bank. You'll have tons of flexibility.
Okay.
So, he does. He takes a job with AIB Bank in a super small IT department. Now, mind you, this is like about to explode into the internet and technology and all of that. Mm-hmm. So His manager said he was a great employee, super conscientious, could be counted on. Literally everything was going great. Summer of 2000, he actually met a woman from the U.S. traveling to Dublin. I don't know if she was there for work or vacation, but they ended up meeting up. Nothing really seemed to come of it. I mean, she lived in the United States. He lives in Ireland.
Yeah.
But in the fall of 2000, his friend worked for an airline and was like, yo, I can give you a free trip to go visit said girl.
Yeah. He was probably like, I'm in.
A trip from Ireland to Alaska, I can't imagine is cheap.
Oh, no. And that's a lot of hours.
Yes. So Trevor apparently went. There's not a whole lot because it sounds like he went like the fall. But this is what I think is weird, but no one else seems to think it's weird. He flies back to Dublin, had a great trip, gets off the plane and goes straight to his parents' house. Doesn't go home, doesn't drop his luggage, doesn't do any of that. And he just basically tells them about his trip and the icebergs and the sights in the United States. And his dad was kind of like, okay, but I have to go to work. Like, I have a meeting. Like, cool.
Okay.
And I can picture it because, like, he's trying to, like, say all these things. And his dad's like, can we make plans, like, later to have this conversation?
Yeah, and you're super excited and it's kind of disappointing.
But his mom was there and they hung out for a few hours and then he had to work the next day. So he heads home, but that was the last time his parents saw him.
Okay, and that to you, that part was strange?
It was strange that he went right to his parents from the airport. Like, don't you want to drop your luggage off and, like, I don't know, go to your house?
I don't think it's that strange because it's like, it's already, my luggage is with me and I'm excited to see my parents. I'll just take care of it later. Most people, probably unlike yourself, wait like a good 1 or 2 weeks to fully unpack anyway.
Oh, no. I unpack the day I get home.
Yeah. See, you're a different breed.
Yeah. It's one of those serial killer traits. Like, if I don't, I unpack the night I get home. Anyway. So let's go to December 9th of 2000. It's the night of Trevor's work Christmas party. He goes with all of his colleagues. They start at a nightclub called Copperface Jack's.
Okay.
So they start at Copperface Jack's, and then the party is at the Hilton Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And they are there for their work party, and then they move the after party to a nightclub called Buck Whaley's. And I feel like this is a pretty normal activity for a work event. Like, I can tell you I've worked with some fun people, and we've gone out after work events and just kind of continued the evening.
Yes.
So around 3:15 on the morning of December 10th, okay, Trevor makes his round, says his goodbyes. He leaves the bar around 3:25 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Dublin, at this time, the taxis are on strike. And there's no Uber, there's no Lyft, like this is all before that.
Yeah.
So Trevor's going to make the walk home. But it's torrentially downpouring.
Okay. Not a great idea.
Well, so Trevor's like, oh, I'm only like 5 minutes from my office and I have an umbrella in my office.
Uh-huh.
So he's like, great, I'm going to swing by my office. No problem. I'll do that and then basically continue home. All right, Amy, I just sent you a Google Maps based on where they say they were. Now, these businesses, some of them aren't in business anymore. But I want to show you. Do you see where it goes? He was on Leeson Street, lower. So somewhere in that area. And see Milano? That's the bridge that was at the corner of his office. So his office was there. And then Serpentine Ave is where he lived.
I see.
So you can see that it was very clearly on his route home.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole entire walk is about 2.5 miles, which in a city is not a lot, right? Because people walk all the time in the city.
It's an easy drive, but in a torrential downpour, you know, I'm thinking it could take an hour or more.
For sure. So he heads back to his office. He gets there, and it appears that he chats with someone outside for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes in. Now, inside of his office, he actually chats. There's an overnight shift that's there. So it's not like he's alone in the building or anything like that. He chatted with a guy that worked there. He's a colleague. He actually made himself a warm cup of tea, which my guess would probably be to sober up a little bit. Just my thoughts. Or get warm.
If you're freezing from the rain, then sure, you want something warm.
Yeah, he sat down at his desk and checked a couple emails and made a list of just things in the morning. Just kind of got out of the rain for a few, hoped it let up.
Also, if he was extremely inebriated or something, someone would have noticed.
Right. His colleague says he wasn't extremely inebriated. He's like, I didn't think he was super intoxicated.
Yep.
He grabs his umbrella and he leaves the office around 4:03 a.m. Now, we have timestamps because we have CCTV footage.
Oh, in the early 2000s, I'm impressed.
Oh, Amy, don't be impressed.
Okay.
Just wait. He leaves work and actually makes a phone call to his friend around 4 a.m. and has a cell phone, and he calls him and he says, hey, I'm on my way home. I'm walking home. And I will chat in the morning. And his friend basically deleted it and was like, okay, well, call me in the morning, whatever. It's 4 in the morning. There is CCTV footage again of him on the bridge that I pointed out to you in the map.
Okay.
And that's at 4:14 a.m. Approximately 30 seconds after he passes it, another person passes the camera behind him.
Oh, no.
Yes. Now, that's the last sighting of Trevor. And the next day, he doesn't show up to work. And he's never not showed up to work before, but everyone knows they were out late the night before. So everyone's mm-hmm. just kind of like, let him sleep it off. It's a Friday. It's fine. Whatever.
And it's a Friday? Ugh. Okay.
Yes. So then, his parents and his friends had talked about loose plans for that weekend, but no mm-hmm. one actually had plans. So from what it sounds like, he told his friends maybe he has to talk to his family to figure out what their plans were. He told his family he has to talk to his friends because he wanted to do both, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when no one could get a hold of him, everyone just thought he had plans with the other people.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a situation of someone else has probably heard from him.
Right. So Monday, he doesn't show up to work again. Now his manager is like, this is not right. This is not okay. They go to HR. HR calls his emergency contact, which are his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, that's when the alarms are sounded. Right? That's when everyone starts calling everyone to be like, anyone heard from him? Basically, we're just trying to find out if anyone heard from him. Please, you know, all the things. Nothing. No anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just tell you now, there's been no development since then.
My first thought is, just maybe it's jumping ahead a little bit, like, after you get all the CCTV footage and stuff, aren't you trying to locate the person that was likely behind him on the camera?
Yes. And I want to talk about that person for 1 second because there is much to do about that person. So, for starters, police believe it was the same person he encountered and chatted with outside his office.
Oh.
And I'm going to send you the CCTV the stills, and you're welcome, and I'll share the link. You don't have to right now, but I'll share the link to the to video. But it's
ominous.
You'll understand why I don't like. There's nothing they can't do anything with this, right?
It's just two figures standing behind a fence.
Right. And then the next two are the ones, the first one is him walking with his umbrella. And then you'll see seconds behind him is another person in a black outfit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what do you notice, though? You can't see anything, right?
You see a figure. You can definitely identify it's a figure. And they're covered from the rain. What else do I notice? It's really the same street lamp, same lighting.
Could you identify someone from that?
Oh, goodness, no. Only maybe roughly a weight.
So the reason we know it's Trevor is because we're able to look and track him from his card leaving his office, the CCTV out his office, the CCTV down the street. We're able to track his movements, so they know mm-hmm. it's Trevor. The other person? No idea.
Right. And I assume that on his path, there are several other cameras that would have picked him up if he had gotten that far.
We don't know.
Is that fair to say?
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, it's a fair assumption. Why would a city put cameras on one part of a path and not another in a busy area?
I agreed with you. Now, the police have, they're called Garda in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
They basically did everything they could. They dredged and dove all the bodies of water in the city. They pulled all CCTV. They talked to friends. They actually flew to Alaska to interview the girl. And she was just kind of like...
Even though it seemed completely unrelated.
Yes. And, I mean, they've decided it was. And also, just so you know, his sisters flew to Alaska, too, to sit down with her to see if they could get anything not investigative, but, like, about their brother.
And I think that's what you should do. Like, if everyone had the resources to follow any lead whatsoever, I'm not knocking them at all for going the distance and following that lead and seeing if there was anything to it. I'm just saying that it's not typical that you find departments able or willing to do that.
Right. And I'm going to read you a quote from Tosh Lavery. He's a senior Gardaí agent, and he worked for 30 years in the Sub Aqua unit. He dove the Grand Canal, and he said, "The canal is the easiest place in the world to search. It's like a swimming pool because it's man-made."
Mm.
So police do not think that he went in the water. And that's actually also verified by his cell phone. His sister had called him probably 3 to 4 times over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to get a hold of him. And the phone rang and rang and then went to voicemail each time. And according to Dr. Philip Perry, who works in the optical communications lab at Dublin City University.
Okay.
In 2000, with technology that the phone had, if it went underwater, it immediately would have gone off and it would not have rang.
Okay.
Now it's different, obviously. But then he's like, if it was submerged, it would have shut off and we wouldn't have been able to get rings.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing happens for 16 years. Then, Then in 2016, the Garda announces it's reopening the Trevor investigation.
Reopening like it was closed?
I don't know that it was closed. I think it was probably a shelved cold case.
Yeah, okay.
And then they were like, we're going to reopen it.
Okay.
They enhanced all the footage. They released it all publicly. They announced that they are certain the same man that Trevor spoke to outside the office is the one that followed him.
Mm.
Then in August of 2017, someone came forward and said, "Hey, listen, just so you know, Trevor was murdered randomly by a gang in Dublin. And this is where he was buried. So do you want to know what they did? They spent the next 8 weeks doing digs in that town, in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Ever.
Wow.
Now, they say, listen, it's not a bad, like, it could be valid. But without any sort of more information or any body, like, we can't just start digging up an entire city.
Correct.
So, in my opinion, they have done everything they possibly can. They also announced a £100,000 award from Crime Stoppers to anyone that gives them information to significantly progress the case.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had nothing. So I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time discussing leaving his life and die by suicide and all that. Right? I think we both can agree, and if I'm wrong, please tell me, that this is foul play.
Yeah, if you want to talk leave your life or something real fast, I don't know why you're going to leave a Christmas party
at 3:45
in the morning
and
then go to your office and do some work.
Right.
You're going to get out of Dodge at that point. And it will buy you extra time before you're supposed to be at work and people are going to perhaps look for you. So you're not going to your office, making sure that you're seen doing some actual work and leaving. So I feel like that is not plausible.
And if you leave your life and before you leave, you want to wrap up loose ends at work, bless you. Because if I'm going to leave my life, work is the last thing I'm going to concern myself with.
And if I were to have done anything to make it look like I was working on a project or something, I probably would do it at a work hour, like leave some emails that appeared to be open-ended or something like that. I wouldn't go in after a Christmas party to take care of some things and actually do them.
Right. Make yourself a to-do list for the next day and then not come back to do it.
Right. So I can quickly write that off.
Me too. So there's the foul play theories range from a lot, truthfully, and it makes me absolutely crazy. But there's the theory that he's in the canal. There's a theory that this person did something to him.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a theory that it's random foul play. Then it's this gang violence. And I think what I struggle with is, okay, let's say, if it's this man, I wonder if it was a stalker. And here's why. Why do you hang out outside a bank at 3 a.m? What, trolling for a victim?
Yes, but maybe.
Well, tell me what your thoughts are.
Okay, so you said a whole lot of things in there. First of all, I mean, when it comes to him being in the canal, I can't help but to think of the case that you did on Ben McDaniel. And
oh, yeah.
Yes, and I have to say, I think I disagreed with you on this case. I don't remember correctly. But there were expert divers that felt very strongly that there are certain places that he couldn't get to in that area, right? And that they thoroughly searched. And my thought was like, maybe he still could be wedged somewhere. I think. Don't quote me on that. But this was a man-made basin type body of water with no crevices or anything. So I'm inclined to trust that he wasn't in there.
Now, they did say they couldn't drain the actual basin because of the structural elements to the buildings. So there's a chance he could be in there, but the canal, there's no way.
Well, I'm inclined to trust that.
And they don't seem to think that because of the phone.
And if this was like a random act of violence and he was thrown in, he would have probably resurface days later, as many bodies do. If it was more thought out and it was premeditated, then he would have been weighed down or something. And at that point, he probably didn't go too far, but he was at the bottom. But again, going back to they search this canal and feel very confident it's man-made, there's no crevices, I think that makes me pretty convinced that he's probably not there.
Okay, so what I want to ask you is what happened? So he's walking. Well, no, seriously.
Good question.
Because he literally vanishes, right? So he's walking down the road.
Yep.
Minding his own business,
well,
apparently.
No, go backwards. Go to when he arrives at his place of employment.
All right, Amy, so you okay. just watched the surveillance.
Yes.
What did you think is interesting or any of that?
I'm trying to figure out what this body language means when both men are at the gate. They're kind of looking down at the ground. I thought at one point someone was looking at their shoes. And then Trevor goes into the gate and the guy disappears in the next frame or whatever. Then he leaves the office and he walks down the street. And I don't know if this is just me. I don't know if it's sped up a lot. But Trevor's walking, but the person that's behind him looks like they're in a rush to catch up, maybe?
That's exactly what I thought, too. But then my question becomes, why? So he just was hanging out outside the bank hoping to get someone? Or was he, like, following Trevor? But he was there. And Trevor just approached and was like, you see my questions?
Yeah, and am I seeing things? Did you notice they were looking at the ground? At one point, I thought Trevor was looking at his feet.
Yeah. What do you get from that?
I'm trying to think what it would be like if you approach someone and ask them for a cigarette or a light. But I don't see why anyone would be, both of them, looking at their feet. Unless the guy was like, hey, I'm looking for something on the ground. Do you see it? I don't know. And I don't know what if it's the same guy that's following him, what's his angle?
Right. And that's what I can't figure out. Like, was he trying to get Trevor? Was he just, like, there and Trevor was in the wrong place the wrong time?
Right. And I'm inclined to think it's the same guy.
Law enforcement says it is. Like, law enforcement is like, it's the same person.
Yeah. I'm inclined to agree with them. And, you know, when... If it were me, I would be like, it could be someone different. Like, how many people could be wearing a jacket? Because I tend to be unprepared for the rain and stuff. And I think a lot of people here, at least in the Northeast, are. Like, we run out in short sleeves and we try and dodge the rain. But, you know, my family, my significant other's family is from Ireland. They live in Ireland. And one of the things they told us to pack is, like, an essential is a raincoat. So what that tells me is that it's a very normalized thing. Like, everyone owns a raincoat. So the fact that this person is probably the same person because of the demeanor and the situation that it was set up, probably, but I wouldn't look too much into the jacket. Like, oh, well, this person had a jacket. Well, everyone's wearing a jacket.
Yeah? What does that mean?
So, okay, I can settle. I'm just saying, like, I can settle on that. That I think it's the same person.
Okay, law enforcement does too, but like, okay, so what happened? We still haven't gotten there.
I guess the simple, let's just start off with a random like theory about why you would be approached in the middle of the night. So someone's either approaching you for money, a ride, or a cigarette or something at that time of night.
Yep.
If they had known each other, I would think their body language would be different. And also, you know, if that other person was following Trevor because they knew each other, he'd be like, hey, Trevor, wait up. So I think it was a stranger that was asking for something. And maybe their angle was, if they're not going to give me money, I'm going to get the money. I'm going to get money, whatever they have on them.
I don't think it's a bad thought, but how? Like, what happened? He knows he's going to come right back out and then he's going to follow him home?
I'm sure he might have been waiting for someone to come out. Gosh, okay, let's look at it this way too. What if it was an ex-employee and they were acquaintances and that's why he entertained a conversation with him? And this disgruntled ex-employee knows that people are working in the building and knows that he could hit them up for money or something when they're walking out.
Okay, so let's say he hits him up for money when he... Well, no, hold on. He goes inside, then he comes back out. The guy's not there. He starts walking home, and the guy follows him. And he says, hey, yep. I'm gonna hit you up for money. And then when he doesn't give it to him, the guy has... I guess my question to you is, does this guy have another accomplice? Because how do you get him off the street? Without pushing him into a car or a building, how do you get him off the street?
The guy's not super jacked looking, you know? He looks like he has the same demeanor as Trevor, the same structure.
Yep.
So I would say that even if he lifted Trevor, it would probably be challenging.
Okay, so that doesn't help at all.
It only implies that if he knocked him out or something, that he had help bringing him to point B.
But why?
But that would indicate to me that it's more, it's about something more than just, I'm trying to rob you for money or have you give me money.
Right. That's my point. Like, I don't understand how we get here. Is he being stalked? Is it planned?
I don't know that... I don't know that I'm there yet to say that he was personally stalked.
As opposed to professionally stalked?
Could it be that they wanted information from someone that could give them access to something in the bank that would aid them in successfully robbing the bank?
I mean, I think it's possible. But then why wait till you're following him? Like, he's about to go inside.
You would want to catch him before he goes in the bank.
One would think.
What if he was approached outside, threatened, and said, you need to go in and get X, Y, and Z and keep a cool head while you're in the bank?
And he doesn't. I mean, but then he is safe inside. Like, why not call Garda then?
Right.
You know what I mean? If someone approaches me outside my work and they're like, I'm going to kill you, go inside and get all the money. I'm going to go inside and lock the door behind me and call the police.
Fair. Maybe that person knew that there was a camera there and wanted to wait until he left and started walking to be out of camera sight.
It's possible. I don't know. I just don't understand how he walks out of his work, walks down the street, even if he's being followed, then what happens? Without having a car or a
place. For me, the why is most important in figuring out what.
Oh, see, I think the what is most important because... The how, I guess, for me. Because if this guy has a car waiting or if he has an accomplice waiting, then it's way more planned than we ever thought.
And that's why I need the why. It's like, if this was a petty crime, then we could probably safely say that, you know, maybe he made it farther than home and our search radius is in a different place. But if it was something that it was planned, then someone made an effort to cover this up.
Right, but I'm still... I mean, we're going to go round and round and round because I'm still stuck on what the hell happened. Like, he walks out of his work.
So here's what makes this case really crazy. When you told me the whole case, I was like, okay, like, we have a couple of theories to talk about. But at face value, it doesn't look that complicated. But when you start teasing apart, like, the events step by step, it's really complicated.
Right.
Why did this person let him go in the building if he had something sinister? And why did he follow him when he came out? What was he doing? Where was he waiting? Was he lying in wait for him? Was he lying in wait for any employee to come out?
Amy, yes, all of that. And that's why I'm like...
I wasn't prepared for this, Melissa.
I know. When I first did it, I was like, oh, well, this is foul play. And then I was like, well, yeah, it's foul play, but what did he do? Alien abduct him from the street? Like, rappel down and grab him and rip him up to the rooftop? You know what I mean? Like, he literally was walking down a street and then he wasn't.
Unless someone followed him from the party. Specifically.
But then they beat him to the office.
Yeah. Well, unless someone was at the party and left earlier than him.
And knew he would go to the office?
Maybe he overheard Trevor talking about making a stop there.
Okay, and then what? Right. They run into each other outside the office. Trevor goes inside. This guy walks away. He hides around the corner. Like, that stuff I can figure out. You know what I mean? Like, okay, Trevor comes back out. This guy starts following him again. And then they both vanish.
Okay, so he's doing IT at a bank, right?
Yep.
I mean, when you're doing IT at a bank, like, at least today, I imagine back then too, you know, no single department in companies has, like, all this access or all this power, right?
Right.
You still have kind of, like, safe walling or I don't know the terminology. Like, if I'm in IT at, let's say, my mental health agency where I used to work, those people in IT have access to our phones and stuff, but they can't get into our charting systems. That's for a different department to be able to get in and troubleshoot what's going on there. So I imagine, like, IT at a bank, you might have access to systems that will, you know, get you into certain aspects of banking. But if you're looking to go in people's personal accounts and get their information, there's probably some safeguarding against that. So the reason why I say all that is because I don't know if people knew that back then or whatever, but someone in IT probably doesn't have access to what you think they do.
Okay, so let's pretend for 1 second they were going to, like, kidnap him and get him to transfer money somewhere. It was planned ahead of time.
Yes.
And they follow him and they have a car waiting. So it's this huge operation.
Yes.
Is that where you're going to land?
Even if they had gotten information out of Trevor, they didn't rob the bank. We know that.
Right.
History tells us that. Or he didn't have the information, but now these people are on the hook for planning a robbery. So they have to get rid of, excuse me for being crass, but they have to get rid of the body. Well, okay, here's where I'm going to land, and it's nowhere good. I'm going to land at this was planned. This was not just a random. Yeah, at first I was like, it's probably something random or whatever. But the way that the person waited, the way that I think a crime of opportunity would have gone, would have been quick and easy right outside. I think they wanted him or someone in IT.
I agree with you.
But that tells me that they knew him. And that's scary.
Do you want to open it up?
Well, hang on. There's one more piece to that. Not only that, they would have had to have known he was at the party and he would show up at the office.
So it had to be someone at the bank.
Ex-employee that still had connections to other employees. I mean, it could have been someone that worked at the hotel and overheard.
But how would they have... What, you think he was planning that early to go back to the office? Guys, it's not very often I get Amy completely silent.
I mean, I'm inclined to say no. He probably made that more of a snap decision. And I think that's the part where I get a little tangled.
Me too. Because I feel the same way. I think that he wasn't planning on doing it, but he was raining and he was like, oh, I have an umbrella at the office. That's a quick walk. I'll grab that. I'm going to chat with someone. You know what I mean? Like, that all feels normal to me.
But I so strongly believe it was planned because that person wouldn't have waited if it was like, I want your money.
I agree with you. The whole thing is crazy.
Oh, right. I'm handing you over my resignation right now. I can't do this anymore.
I'll tell you what. Like I told you, I read it and was like, all right, foul play. Got it. And then obviously in my head, I was trying to like think it through and I just couldn't get anywhere. I end up back in the same place. All right, guys. So tell us what you think. All right. This was suggested by Megan. So Megan, if you have any thoughts or theories, please tell them. Everyone else, share yours too. And we'll be back next week with a whole new case.
All right. Thanks.
Bye. Bye.
For more more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.